meeting. I hope that you had a good weekend.
Konnichiwa, Sitira. This morning we are with the National Treasury. I have received an apology from the DG of Treasury, Mr. Fuzine. He also called me to indicate that he would not lead the delegation this morning. He would have loved to be here. However, due to other commitments, he's not able to join us. And in the apology, he has delegated Ms. Ali Edwards, Head of the Employment and Social Security Project Management Unit, to stand in for him. She will lead the delegation, accompanied by Mr. Misa Sajoy from the Development Bank of South Africa. So I guess that honorable members, I'm sure we accept the apology of the DG. Do I take that? Accept that? Okay, thank you. All right. Honorable members, as we would know, we invited the National Federation to brief us on the progress that is being made to create jobs as government establish the Jobs Fund. The total amount subject to corruption was 9 billion. And now, I think that as committee of parliament, we would like to know where has the 9 billion gone to, where are we now in terms of spending, what number of jobs have been created. Hoping that those jobs are sustainable jobs that have been created. Hoping that those jobs are sustainable jobs. So we are. I would like to welcome the delegation. This is a team. Okay. Let them allow you to brief us. I know that I don't know if you were here last time, but I think that maybe we need to find a way as parliament. Because I do know that you briefed the Standing Committee on Finance as well. I don't know who else could be the trade and industry. So it means that as Parliament, we are worried about the progress on this. But maybe next time, we'll coordinate much better in Parliament so that you can afford to work for us rather than reporting every day to different people. But on that note, I invite you then to address us.
Thank you very much, Kay. Thank you to the Kati. Thank you to yourself for this opportunity. We appreciate it very much. Just to reiterate the apologies from our DG, Nungisa Fuzeli. He's really sorry that he couldn't be here today. You've introduced the team. The other members is Ms. Liesl Essien, and she's responsible for the design of the financial management framework of the Jobs Fund, and Mr. Timothy Hopton, who is responsible for the governance policies and procedures and the design of the different funding rounds. I'm the officer who's ultimately responsible in the Treasury. So thank you very much to yourself and the committee. Just to note, Chair, that we did circulate some documentation before the meeting. We circulated a copy of the Jobs Fund fact sheet that talks about our processes. We circulated a document that we referred to as the frequently asked questions. After three funding rounds, there's been quite a lot of questions about how people should apply, kind of projects that we look for. So these documents are standard documents that you could find on our website. We also circulated funding criteria, as well as specific examples of the kind of projects that the Jobs Fund supports. However, to start with, then if we go to the first slide, the objective of the fund is to co-finance public and private sector projects that have the potential to contribute significantly to sustainable job creation. We look for innovative approaches to job creation. We look to leverage existing capacity in the not-for-profit, public, and private sector. The challenge for government is to effectively respond to structural unemployment, a situation which is driven by structural distortions, inequality, and fragmentation of the South African economy. However, we also have a significant depth of potential for both enterprise and skills development, both of which currently has not been fully mobilized. Government has responded with developmental measures that combine both state capacity and private sector resources, seeking innovative partnerships to address these challenges. The outcomes government seeks is to expand work opportunities, improve the quality of work for the most marginalized, and scale up established private and public sector programs aimed at youth unemployment. The Jobs Fund has identified the following interventions to support government's efforts. It does this through four funding windows: enterprise development, infrastructure development, support for work seekers, and institutional capacity building. The fund operates along the lines of a challenge fund. It is an innovative funding instrument which operates in a different way to many other programs, which may either be loan or grant-based. The guiding principles for the fund include openness, transparency, and competitiveness. And I must say at this point that these principles have stood us in good stead after having gone through three funding rounds. It is open to any organization, public, private, or not-for-profit, who firstly has a track record, who can demonstrate commercial viability of the proposed initiative. I emphasize commercial viability, who can demonstrate the leveraging of private sector capacity towards the achievement of public sector goals. It is transparent in that it is a clear application and assessment process, and they are always clearly communicated criteria. It is competitive. An independent investment committee allocates funds, and applications compete against one another for funding. And I think I want to pause and just emphasize that point, because often we would have the public comes up and says that I have a good idea. I have a good idea about how to create jobs. The point about the Jobs Fund is that it is a competitive process. We look for the best ideas to filter to the top. So whether you're from the private sector, the public sector, or not for profit, your idea competes with every other idea around our creation. All project supporters have to provide matched funding. Private sector applicants are expected to match on a one-to-one basis, and non-private applicants are expected to match on a 1:0.2 basis. The Jobs Fund complements rather than displaces other funding programs. Again, I want to pause here. Often, we have applications which are better suited to other instruments that government has made available. And so the Jobs Fund is very careful about not displacing other government and other public funding programs. These programs vary between social protection interventions such as social grants, EPWP and CWP programs, industrial policy support, which includes DTI incentives, IDC industrial sector loans, and enterprise development support that include IDC loans and equity. Between these, There are all the other enterprise development support programs, which include DTIs, cooperative incentive schemes, loans through the IDC, CEFA, and the NEF. There are also programs at provincial level, for example, Kajima in the KZN and the Western Cape LED Growth Fund. The point to make here is that there is a range of funding instruments that government has made available for job creation. In an effort to assist our applicants, the Treasury has commissioned some research to understand where the different funding spots are within government. There's an excess of about 40 billion rand circulating for job creation. And we're finalizing that research, and the intention is to put that onto our website so that if an applicant is not successful at the jobs fund, they would be able to find out what other pots of money is being made available, how to access that money. It is within enterprise development that the jobs fund has identified a specific gap which it seeks to address, namely to support enterprise development but with an explicit focus on innovation that can link to sustainable job creation. The jobs fund has four initial funding windows, each aimed at addressing a particular constraint to job creation. These constraints include both supply and demand constraints. Within the enterprise development window, the aim of the funding window is to lower the cost and risk barriers that inhibit the development of innovative private, non-private-led enterprise models and partnerships that could lead to sustainable job creation initiatives. In the infrastructure development funding window, this window focuses on light infrastructure investment projects that will unlock job creation potential. Initiatives include critical missing infrastructure that create trading opportunities and access to markets. Within the support for work seekers window, this window targets a cluster of initiatives aimed at facilitating rapid access to employment and work-related training for unemployed people, particularly youth. I'd like to pause here, Chair, because this is a very significant window in that often we would receive applications with people who have right ideas about providing training opportunities. Within the job fund, we say that is not enough. A training opportunity within itself is not sufficient. What we'd like to see is that the training opportunity results either in some practical work experience as well as a permanent job. And for that to happen, applicants who come to us must have in place off-take agreements with potential employers. The last funding window is institutional capacity building, and this window provides for cross-cutting institutional fencing and capacity building initiatives aimed at institutions through which job creation can be facilitated. The Jobs Fund has clearly defined processes for the selection of projects. It has a two-stage process. The first stage is a concept note, which allows us to check the basics of an application, and the concept is sound and falls within our mandate through our investment strategy. The logic here is that we do not want applicants to incur excessive costs, in preparing detailed business plans if the idea is not something that resonates with the Jobs Fund. Only if an applicant passes the stage do we ask them to submit a full application. And this full application comprises of a very detailed project implementation plan and budget. And at this stage, a complete due diligence is also conducted on the project. On the recommendation of the project management unit based at the Development Bank, these projects are brought for consideration before an independent investment committee which makes funding decisions. This end-to-end process is facilitated by an online grant management system. The targeted time frame for making investment decisions is approximately 5 to 6 months. That is from the time the funding round closes to the point at which the investment committee makes a decision. However, that is not the point at which funds are disbursed. Funds are only disbursed when a grantee contracts with us. So the grant agreement must be signed, the conditions precedent set by investment committee must be met, and it must be a detailed project implementation plan and a budget that satisfies our requirements. We have found that this is often where the wheels come off at the contracting stage, and I'll speak a bit more about that later. Moving on from that then, subsequent quarterly disbursements are also important to note that, and I know that this is a question that the committee will ask us about, is about what has been the rate of disbursement. Please note at this stage though, the point to be made is that disbursements only flow on the basis of project achieving its milestones. Projects are given 36 months to implement their projects and achieve their targets. However, our continued research has indicated that this is too short a period. At practical level, projects are indicating, and what we are picking up, they need quite long lead times to get themselves established, and they're not able to achieve their targets within a 3-year implementation period. Even at least... Yes, sir. Yes, Jay. They may be able to achieve the jobs targets within 36 months. They must achieve these job targets within 36 months. Yes. So the criticism often laid at the job fund is that we are the jobs. You're the job fund. Why is the jobs not here and now? We contract for people to deliver those jobs over a 36-month period. We're finding that projects take almost up to a year to get themselves settled and established, design phase, sorted out and all of that, and those are just some of the practical lessons that we've been picking up, but we haven't changed our criteria. So in the selection of a project, we're looking for all the conditions that indicate that this project should be able to deliver over 36 months, but when you get there, the reality is often different. Sometimes there are also projects that come to us that look as if they have a nucleus of a very good idea, but they don't have everything in place. And under those circumstances, instead of allocating the full grant amount that they ask for, we would then suggest that we make available technical assistance in order to bring that project to a place where it could move and be competitive. We talk money, Chair. So on the MTS budget, the jobs fund commitment is 9 billion, of which 5.3 billion has been budgeted for so far in the fiscal framework. It was originally estimated that the fund would be a 5-year program, 3 years for implementation, and 2 years for closeout. To date, we have run 3 funding rounds, and as indicated earlier, the reality on the ground informs us that our original estimates would have to be adjusted. Perhaps we were a tad bit too optimistic. It is now estimated that it would be more feasible to allocate the budget over 8 years instead of the original 5 years. 2011-2012 being the establishment year, 2012-13 to 2017-18 would provide a 6-year implementation period. Compared to other international programs that we have looked at, similar programs, this time frame of 6 years continues to be optimistic. And then 2018-19 be the closeout year of the fund. The extension of the time horizon for the fund has been influenced by the following factors. The response to our calls for proposals, and as you would note, we have open call for proposals, and we can't always guarantee the kind of response that we would have to that call for proposals. The quality of the projects that have been submitted have been less than what was anticipated. The size of the project application, our ability to process applications, contract, and implement, the ability to proactively build a quality pipeline of feasible projects, and the amount of match funding the private sector is willing and able to offer as leverage. These factors have informed the future budgetary allocations required, and it will also inform the pace of disbursements. In total, the breakdown of the fund is, of the 9 billion allocated, 90% comprises jobs fund grant, 5.5% comprises administration of the fund, and that includes the DBSA and the National Treasury, 3% comprises technical assistance and other influence initiatives, and 1.5% comprises research, learning, specialist support on a jobs fund. The jobs fund has completed 2 funding rounds to date and is currently midway through the 3rd round. The investment committee has approved 66 projects with a total grant commitment of 3.4 billion rand, and this has leveraged a further 3.5 billion in match funding from our project partners. Most of the funding to date has been allocated to applications under the Enterprise Development and Support for Work Seekers windows, 32-48% and 21-32% respectively. And the average size grant size is 52 million and the average project size is 105 million. Of the 66 projects to which the ICA allocated funds, 61 has been contracted. The job fund grant value that has been contracted is 2.9 billion. So I make this distinction here. The investment committee has made funding decisions to 66 projects, but we've only contracted 61 of those projects today. And that is why the difference in the money. 3.4 billion, we said yes, we accept those applications, but you know, it becomes more real when you sign on the dotted line, that's 2.9 billion. And this has leveraged 2.7 billion from project partners. Yes, outstanding contract. That's correct, Jay. Based on the 61 contracted projects, those grantees that we've contracted with have promised to create 92,717 permanent jobs. They've promised to place an additional 45,891 persons into current vacant positions. And they promised to provide training to 100,877 incumbents. Enterprise development projects account for only 27.7% of contractor gross funding. But we've done our analysis, and the indications are that it will contribute 70% to 64,828 of the 92,000 permanent jobs target.
I appreciate if maybe I do understand that there are 66 projects and 61 are contracted, but when we came to number of jobs created and this where I started getting confused. I couldn't follow you well because you were very, very fast, and I think that's very important information for us.
The point that we're trying to make is that the investment committee approved, they allocated funds to 66 projects. So they said, you know, that passed that hurdle. The DBSA of that 66, they've now contracted with 61 projects. Those 61 projects, when they say that they will create 92,000 jobs. So that is the promise, Chair, over 3 years of implementation. And to emphasize, those permanent jobs are jobs which must be in existence post the period of grant. They must continue, yes. And that is why we separate out and we don't aggregate, because those we see as jobs that continue beyond the life of the grant, so sustainable jobs, and to a large extent, jobs that didn't exist before. The 45,891, we make that distinction because those are current vacant positions. And through initiatives within, for example, our job seekers windows, we are better able to match people to vacant positions. So we separate out the numbers. Yes, I'm going to. Okay. No, I'm going to provide you with an example.
The permanent jobs, record, 92,000.
Yes.
Now, somebody comes and say, I want to apply for basic diploma, elsewhere, whatever.
Okay.
So after that category, it's 45,000. That's what you're talking about. If you could just know, I agree.
Yes.
That's only, I think, that important part for us about job creation. Yes.
So, Chi, thank you very much for that opportunity, because this is very important to us within the Jobs Fund. We don't want to aggregate job numbers so we can come to you and say that, you know, we've achieved 150,000. But when you dig two steps deeper, you see that the type of jobs is actually different. So we want to make that distinction. We're saying, for example, those 92,000 jobs are jobs that didn't exist before. So if we provide a support to an entrepreneur and that entrepreneur's business grows, that entrepreneur would recruit more people. That is how we count the 92,000. in the second part, so now this 45,000 is not part of the 92,000. It's a different number. This 45,000, we have an example of a project called Harambee. What Harambee does is it advertises that they run a program that will provide you with training, and once you've gone through training, you'll be given an opportunity to work within a particular job, and once you've been completed that kind of internship, they also have agreements with companies like Hollard and Nando's and a host of other companies, which then will make provision for those individuals to get jobs. They will place them, but they will place them in vacant positions in their operations. So that is over and above the new positions. And then, of course, there's also the number of people that would be trained. On slide 30, we just provided you with an indication of the geographic distribution of projects. And often we get asked the question, well, why does the jobs fund not specifically target those provinces who have the highest challenges? Now, it is open, it's a particular fund, and so anybody, anywhere can apply. But what the DBS has done is has also gone down to all the provinces where they've hosted road shows, invited the different players.
It has classified for us permanent jobs, 92,000, placement. Then the training one for contracted jobs. I thought it would take you back.
Oh, no, this is a good opportunity. When you emphasize, I get a chance to speak longer. Promote the fund. So the training opportunities are created either through the support for work seekers window. So any project will give us an indication. Whatever project we support, often these projects have a training component. And that training component is about work readiness. So teaching people how to conduct themselves in the work environment. A lot of these projects recruit people either from matric or sometimes post-matric, but even if it's post-matric, people still don't know how to conduct themselves in a work environment, so it's work readiness training. And then there is a technique, and then there's also a technical component to the training. So, for example, in the Harambee case, if they have offset agreements with Hollard Insurance, and they are going to be placing people in Hollard Insurance's call center, then they will be given technical training on how to operate. Yes.
Can they mention first one product, and then we take from their stepwise? I think that really helps us. Because we are here with the theory business, and it's very interesting. But I think we must come to the practical side. Just mention us and take step by step. Say for us, listen, that's my name. We can, what is, oh, you have 61 projects. I think actually we must have a list of these projects. If they can provide this to us, then we know this project is a job fund. It's one of the projects. If we can get the seed of the 61. But take out day one now, and then you take us step by step and say, listen, that is for training, that is the amount, that is the place. I think they come with a plan to you, businessman. Am I right? They said they want their building, first of all, a place where they can start their business. Then they budget for a certain amount of credit. Am I right? And then they have a plan how many products they can produce at the end of the day. After the training, what is the sustainable? Is your sustainable 5 years, 10 years, or is it going with medical schemes or pension funds? I think then we can come to something. You can make it much more practical. That's brilliant, but it's too theoretical for me personally. If I go back to my constituents and I have to plan, we have funds. Then they will tell us, the first question will be, give me an example. Is there possibilities for training for the people here? If you can break it up like this, then I think, Jay, because we must take this message to the people who haven't got, you know, who must understand in simple terms how we can start a business. because to use my, I'm in Mosselbay and we sit with a lot of people there. But we have training facilities, tremendous preparation A and other things. But the reality is, there are people who are interested to start a business outside Mosselbay. But they want to hear how can they make use of this. And at the end of the day, it is how can you assist them to start this business. Are there people who can make contact? Give us the names with whom they can make contact. If comments are only or comments are issue, person that they can say, listen, okay, that is the person that we can. So search there, but I think then we can, and they can take it to the office.
People come to you. They should know. They have heard about this. What is it that accepted from? And the MP has no idea, has no clue. Says, no, just speak to DDSP because we have no clue. So, I mean, that's why we keep on coming back slowly because we want to understand ourselves. When people come, we can advise and say, okay, go. And I can be able, if there are challenges, pick up a phone to me. What is happening? The person has come to you and opening and closing your windows, is it too dusty outside?
Thank you for the honourable member. I think it's good, and I appreciate the engagement. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take Timothy to give you an example. We've got two projects that we've highlighted, and Vanessa can add a third, and we'll give you some very practical examples of how they apply and the process they went through and what the project really is about.
Because if they are ready, if I say my constituency arrange a workshop for 15, 20, 30 people who want to make use of this, because you must come and tell them their room. You must bring the message to them. And that is where you can start the practical thing. If you can give that to us, the press and everything at the end of the day. But I just want to find, because these people that make contact with you, you know, they maybe perhaps use some people here in the city that is professional. You know, in the rural areas, the people are there. But the point is, it is not so easy to make the contact with your partner. I would appreciate that.
Thank you. So I'll talk the committee through the Awetu project, which is the one on the right-hand side there. And I think it's a very good example because it's in the enterprise development window, and it specifically targets high-potential micro-entrepreneurs. So it's specifically the kinds of people who are really working with a very small business and are possibly looking for help and support to try and grow that business. And then obviously as they grow that business and employ more people, that creates new permanent jobs. That is, they can support 1,000 entrepreneurs and the potential to create 3,000 sustainable jobs. So the assumption that each entrepreneur will employ an additional 3 people, in addition to themselves, that is. So this would fall in the category, we have quite a number of projects that are business incubation projects, which essentially focus on SMEs and focus on growing them. So obviously in enterprise development, you know, in South Africa we have a bit of an issue with SMEs that struggle to access funding, business development services, and this has been a very popular window or popular in terms of applications in the Dobbs Fund. So the Awetu is based in Gauteng. They operate out of the Constitutional Court precinct, actually. And the logic behind the Awetu is that many people in underserviced areas are running small businesses and that they have a high degree of latent entrepreneurial talent. So these people are running businesses, they're making it happen, they're operators on the street, and if they were given more resources and targeted training, they would be able to grow these businesses. So I'll just talk you through the Awetu process from beginning to end, and I think that will possibly be quite helpful. So Awetu essentially has teams of people which go out into Soweto, Alex, and areas like that, and identify entrepreneurs. This is everything from people running little spaza shops on the side of the road, hair salons, informal businesses, washing cars, people running possibly maybe shabins on their homes, any informal kind of business, and a way to representative will go out and speak to these people. And what they do is they have a little tablet and they show them a short video explaining the Awetu program. And the idea is to try and recruit people to come to a training and assessment session at the Aware2 offices. What happens is people come into this session, they're given some money to cover the cost of their transport there, and they're put through an assessment process. There's a basic test to assess their numeracy and their literacy. There's a couple of very inventive exercises they do to test people's logical thinking, and obviously people then also have to talk a little bit about their business and write a bit about their business plan. So that's the first phase, is recruiting people to come in and an assessment process. What Aware2 then does, they have a whole methodology to identify the people who they think have the highest potential. And those people are then selected to take part in the Aware2 program, and they sign up as entrepreneurs. And when they sign up, they sign a contract that they will partner with Aware2 to grow their businesses. Aware2 undertakes to double the profits of these micro-businesses within the first 6 months. And that sounds like a very audacious target, but we're talking often very small amounts of money, 2,000-3,000 rand turnover, and Aware2 will, you know, undertake that if that entrepreneur works with them within 6 months, that will double. Each of these businesses is then assigned a mentor, and the mentor visits them almost every single week. They go through an incubation boot camp, where they're taught business principles that are specific to their business. There's a marketing strategy put in. All of this kind of support is given to this micro-entrepreneur.
Can I come in? Okay, who appoints the mentors? Who pays for the mentors? And who pays the mentors?
So the people who appoint the mentors, train the mentors, all of those things, is Aware2 themselves. So the Jobs Fund does not itself directly target. We don't have the capacity to directly target a micro-entrepreneur. As a 9 billion rand fund, the staff of the DBSA do not go out and individually work with the micro-entrepreneur, but we work with intermediaries. So Aware2 is a fairly large amount of money, 20 million, and it's an entire program package. So when they come to the investment committee, they say, this is our methodology for training people. This is who we will get to be mentors. And as part of the appraisal process, the team at the DBSA, the enterprise development specialists, interrogate this project logic.
Who are they? Are they the entrepreneurs, or are they the company that started? And how many?
Now, can I understand you, comrade? You're saying that Aware2 it is business, enterprise development business, which made an application to DBSA and said, this is what we are going to do. We have, as Aware2, we have assembled a number of mentors, people to support these small business people that we're talking about, each one with the expiration of what is happening. Otherwise, they took a business plan to DBSA in terms of what they want to do, how they would carry out these responsibilities. And that's how I understand what you are saying.
How many people are in it? What is your company? Because they got the 4 million rand, am I right? You get them 4 million rand. You get them 20 million. Okay. And from that 20 million rand, they put a plan for you together. And at the end of the day, they say the 20 million rand will bring you at the end of it double the money of small entrepreneurs in 6 months. Am I right?
Not quite. So if at a simple level, for our 20 million rand worth of grant funding, we will support 1,000 entrepreneurs and create 3,000 sustainable jobs. The total cost of implementing that program to support the 1,000 entrepreneurs is 24 million rand. So in this particular case, they're not providing finance to SMMEs. So we do have one or two projects which do provide finance, and so make an arrangement where inside the funding there might be a loan fund or something like that. In the case of Aware2, they don't. They might get the entrepreneurs finance ready and assist them in applying to a typical commercial lender like a bank or something for an enterprise loan, but they don't provide the finance themselves. So when you see these costing numbers here, That's the number to implement the entire project. I can see it slightly bigger. So
that's why I'm just thinking about this, and I think, Chair, I think the only way we can be here today equipped with the necessary information is if we can change use. I'm not certain if you say that we must first finish this thing and come back to that, because there's a lot of questions I want to ask with a view to assist my people in my constituency, all of us. So must we first finish this thing and come back to the questions? Because I think there's more practical things that I... Yeah.
A small question here. On the project, the Awutu project, where you have 1,000 entrepreneurship and 3,000 jobs to be created, and you say at least there must be 3 present employed, but a basket of these 1,000 is a mixed bag from the car washer to a hairdresser or a spaza shop or talent. Now, when you say permanent job, what's the measurement of that permanent job? Who holds the guarantee of the permanent job at the exit level? And what are the consequences of non-compliance to what has been called the permanent job at the car wash, for an example, or in the service shop?
Honorable Ramesh, can I start? Because that question, I think, is the one that Honorable Paris Blom was saying. So it's at the level of engagement now with them. And I think that's a very important question. But let us allow them to finish. I thought that you wanted that small clarity in the presentation. That was a substantial, what you call a question, you know. It's very interesting. I do have a question. But, okay, let's go through with, so I think you're almost done. Just go through, and then I'm sure in the back of your mind, then there's this question that we have just asked to be deferred to discussion. If you have a way of dealing with it in the process, it is fine. Okay, please continue.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for all questions. So then, as indicated, we've had 2 funding rounds. In the middle of our 3rd funding round, it closed on the 15th of March. And within the 3rd funding round, we only opened up 2 funding windows, and that was the infrastructure and the enterprise funding window. And that was based on the response that we had received and our analysis of which types of projects are yielding a higher level of jobs. During the 3rd fund round, we also were more proactive and pursued a very strong origination strategy to increase the quality of our application. In the 3rd funding round, we received 600 applications. These applications have already been competitively assessed, and 56 have been shortlisted. By the 26th of June of this year, the shortlisted applicants have submitted their full business case applications, and these are now being processed by the DBSA. The following slide just provides examples of the types of projects that we have funded, and we've begun to speak to some of that. I think that it is important to note that the Jobs Fund, while our primary objective is about creating jobs, the Jobs Fund aims to achieve more than just job creation. We target learning, which can be fed back into policy. A very strong component of the Jobs Fund is the monitoring and evaluation framework that we have put in place. Timothy has spoken about the Aware to project. Some of the information that this project tracks is around business characteristics that act as leading indicators of growth in earnings and employment. They track personal characteristics that act as leading indicators of strong, sustainable business performance. They track engagement strategies that most effectively catalyze growth. They track success hurdles that, if met, justify additional investment of capital and resources. They track contractual terms that create the right incentives to modify behavior, drive growth, and formalize business operations over time. They track commercial opportunities that connect formal sector capital and resource markets with informal sector assets at scale to create financial sustainability and reduce the need for grant funding. By being able to track this kind of information, we get closer to understanding what kind of support must be made available, as well as what kind of enterprise models have a propensity to be more successful than others. So this is the kind of information that we track in a way to demonstrate this. As I said, the Jobs Fund has a monitoring and evaluation framework, and there's a lot of detail about what we have to do to track the performance of projects and the indicators of a certain social project. Lastly, I think that the second part is that Jobs Fund has been confronted with a number of challenges. And these include limited project origination capacity, our ability to leverage intermediaries' capabilities to improve the reach of the fund, the volume of applications received and the shorter six-month time frame that we set for ourselves, the ability to access specialist capacity for complex projects, some of the delays we've experienced in finalizing contracting, and the lead time required by our project partners to get their projects up and running. Going forward, critical success factors for the Jobs Fund include the introduction of specialized intermediaries as per our original strategy to expand our research coverage, and more focused funding windows and theme-based calls for proposals, taking into consideration the research that we are conducting, a more focused role for the DBSA implementation and aligning their capacity with the strategic needs and reviewing operational processes for efficiency gains. A changing role for Treasury, owning the strategic investment approach, managing the fund's performance, taking on evaluation and learning functions. And also an increase in the lifespan of the fund, and this is influenced, as indicated before, by the pace of the implementation of current grants, the nature and the size of the projects responding to the call for proposals, the amount of matched funding the private sector is willing and able to offer as a bridge, and the time it takes to implement a more appropriate approach to managing a platform of intermediaries. Thank you, Jane.
So, if I can start with the question of the member about the practicality of how an applicant, and I think the concern I'm hearing the member's voice is about the consistency in which it's modified. And how is this a way to project this to be a participant? So, in accessing the job site, what the DBSA has done, they've gone and voted to the region, in addition to that, oh, then I can put it around. Okay. So there's that kind of communication that happens. Then we publish on our website how to apply to the Jobs Fund. We also have I understand. We also have had links with Chambers of Commerce in different provinces to tell them what it is we're doing the job fund and how it is that people need to apply. So for example, in the Aware to case, when we issued we opened up the funding round, they submitted their application to the DBSA. their application, and they were submitted in the first funding round. And the first funding round I think we received was 2,600 applications. Yes. How many people in the organization? They started out without a youth.
The reason why I asked them here is that because you sit with entrepreneurs that wants to make it from here, but they ask the question, how many must be? Must we be 10 or 15 or 20?
Oh,
because of different skills. That is the point I want to ask. What is the, is there a certain guidelines or just the opinion?
There is actually no limit, no minimum or no maximum that's given to any organization that comes to say you've got so many people or you don't have so many people. The biggest issue, it comes where we talk about the leveraging of money. Because when you put money as a fund, the project applicant has to also put a certain amount of money to actually match. That's the only difference.
So to continue the way to story, when they apply the job funding to them, but they had a good idea, and despite of having this 2,000 odd applications, they filtered to the top because they liked the innovation, they liked the idea, and what they demonstrated was the ability to actually take a book. So they achieved them and they applied. Now they are 48. And when they started with incubating 3 entrepreneurs. They are now incubating 200 entrepreneurs. So we two responded to an open call for proposals. They were competitively assessed against 2,651 applications. They filtered to the top. They really performed well against our selection criteria. A recommendation was made to the investment committee that this is a worthy project. The investment committee then looked at the project and made up their own mind. The GDS, they can't tell the investment committee. The GDS, they can't make a decision. The investment committee independently makes this decision. We then said to Aware to this, you've got the funding. Aware then got themselves, you know, they start establishing the offices and the programs that they're going to take the entrepreneurs through. They started recruiting staff in order to fulfill this, these objectives of their project. And now they are in full implementation. So, as Timothy said, within the job span, the DBSA, we don't have so many individuals that can interact at that level. But we do look towards people who can operate as intermediaries, who have that kind of reach into the lower level. And the other thing about the people that are way to identify and work with is many of these people don't have matric. They don't have matric, and I was fortunate I went with one of these entrepreneurs. He started his business is about taking clean bread to your doorstep. Okay, so he lived in Alex, and he thought that there's a gap. There's lots of elderly people and others who can't go to the shop and get their bread, and so he takes the bread, he delivers it to their home. He started out with 20 rand. He's now 2 years later, he's got a turnover of 20,000 per month. On this day when I accompanied him, he went to a school in Alexander. His idea was that he could grow his business if he had more people who could distribute the bread. And he identified that if he went to the school and he got learners to between 4 and 6 in the afternoon, just in their areas, distribute bread and sell bread, that those learners could on average make 1,000 rand a month. And what I did was I went with him and he would pitch his idea to the school principal and the teachers and that as well. And he was able to do this because he'd gone through the awareness program. He was provided with coaching, and when he went to pitch his idea, even though he pitched it himself, his mentor and coach was with him. So that if he needed support, the coach was with him to assist. So on a very practical level, people start out very small and they grow. Are we going to answer the question now? Let Timothy and Denise come in about, you know, is there a guarantee about if you could create one entrepreneur, will they create 3 jobs? There is no guarantee. But what you do look for is, what is that business model? And do they have the potential to grow? And when it comes to, is this a permanent job? It's about saying, if that person is sustainable, then they will have requirements for labor and for work. So I'll stop now, even if you say you want to come in to see.
Just one more example. I mean, before I even get to example, Nalo mentioned a very good point. That generally, the people that are employed, particularly on the placement side, are people that would not ordinarily have had an opportunity to get a job in any case. Because some of them have got matric, and they actually don't know anything else to do. So when they get placed into the existing positions, from that 45,000 that you're talking about, is generally those people. But one of the examples that I can give you is here in the Western Cape. We've got a project that is already implemented and finished. This project requested, I think it was 5501, which was 6 million rand in total, that is needed to actually implement this project. It's called Sun Parks, South African National Park. It's 5 million and 1 million. 5 from ours and 1 million from them. So you remember we did 0.2 and then the other one is 100%. And then they wanted to, if you recall, if you go backtrack, maybe about a year and a bit ago, the mountain here, there were some serious challenges around the tourism, because there were some robberies and people were being mugged, etc., etc. So the project applied in time, and then was actually granted. It was one of them that was competitive and actually assisted to the top. It wanted to implement a project where they can train and create the safety within the mountain, and then they had to employ people that would not ordinarily have been employed, train them to be like policemen, if you want to call it that. Yeah, the safety, yeah, safe monitors, as you say, but they like policemen to actually make sure that they create a safety in the mountain, so the 50 of them. So that project has started, it's complete, the 50 people are employed there, and you probably don't get a lot anymore about any of the problem that has happened. Yeah. There's a problem, so we need to give them more money so they can add more people. Yes. Yes. Sun Park, yes. Yes. That's why Najwa, when she spoke right early, when she was talking about who can apply, they actually included everybody. Everybody can apply. As long as, at the end of the day, there are jobs that get created for the people that actually need the jobs. Permanent jobs, yes.
Right, so the money and comes from that person is going to them. Because when you say, our interpretation could be wrong.
Sorry, thank you. Our interpretation could have been wrong because government appropriates money, and our understanding is that money is appropriated to the public out there. If the Department of Environmental Affairs, whatever, public works, you name it, wants money, I think that they have got ways of getting access to the money. And it's part of their job by nature. It's to create what you call jobs. But through the other channels, because now, if the Mr. Fatal out there is competing with the department, I think to us now it's problematic. But before we go too far, let's start with Mr. Ramasakana's question. I've noted your head. Mr. Ramasakana says, somebody comes, Mr. Awetu comes and says, this is what I'm going to do. You say, fine, we have looked at your business plan, we think that it makes sense. Here's the money. What happens?
Yeah, so in response to that, I think the first thing to note is that the project applicant is responsible for meeting their targets. So in the case of Awetu, if they incubate someone who has a car wash who employs two additional people, the person held accountable is not the person running the car wash. Timothy Hopkins.
in general. You have the funding. So could you take money at 20 million rand? I got my 20 million, you give me a 20 million, I walk away. What happened?
Okay, so then I can answer in a significant amount of detail. So the job fund works on a quarterly disbursement cycle. So when a project signs and contracts, they're given an advance disbursement, and that advance disbursement is equivalent to their first quarter's projected expenditure, what they're going to spend. At the end of every single quarter, we have an online reporting system where the project has to report, number one, on their finances. What did they actually spend against the projections which they put in, and their cash flow, and they submit supporting documentation for this, bank account statements, you know, all that kind of verification information. So that's one aspect. The second aspect is they also report against their program targets, and those fall into two different kinds of categories. The first are the Jobs Fund program targets, and those are the ones which you saw up there which Najwa had. And those are standard indicators which every single project that we fund has to report against. So they're defined in exactly the same way. So it's not the case that if Najwa reports a new job and I report a new job, actually we're counting different things. Everybody has the standard definition. And then they also report their milestone indicators. So an example would be, you know, the program indicators are things like number of beneficiaries trained or number of new permanent jobs. A milestone indicator might be 7 training workshops held. Now, we don't make everybody report how many training workshops they held because not everybody holds training workshops as part of the project. And so those are then assessed by the project managers who check all of the finances, who check all of the implementation targets, and check all of the narrative reporting which goes on. So we ask projects to tell us what's happening, what's going to be happening next quarter, have you experienced any challenges, and that's also the slide on part of what the Job Fund is really interested about is what learning can we gain from each project. So it's not just about checking off, have you spent the money, have you hit your 3 targets. We want to know how, what happened, was there a challenge, is there anything we can gain from this. And there's then an internal process at the DBSA, which Dumisa can speak to, where there is a disbursement panel which looks at each project to check that everything has been assessed correctly. And only once it's gone through that panel is then a disbursement approved. So a project also then requests an amount of money for the next quarter based on the expected activity. So it's very much not a case of if you approve for 20 million, the 20 million goes into your bank account and 3 years later we come back and say, oh, by the way, we expected a couple of jobs, can you let us know? These are checked on a quarterly basis. And it's something that we're really proud of. You would have seen on the slide early on, we said we have best practice monitoring evaluation. And these kinds of systems for tracking indicators, for tracking the finance, we really modeled on international best practice and funds, donors such as the US and the UK are really big on this.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I don't know.
You're not on this one now.
On
what? I want us to exhaust the question that Honorable Fadana was raising, the question of monitoring of that project. Are you on that one? Are you raising another
not
question?
Really, sure.
So I would want him maybe to exhaust this one.
I don't know whether it was under.
Okay.
But what I want to answer is that I can hear this with the model that is monitored. But again, in that model, it does not, for me, it's around the issue of, they are saying that this you can report, I can report sitting on my desktop. But for our example, check, there's where they say they make sure that financial sustainability. Now my question is, how do you know that the financial sustainability into this all these things? Because if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm using my own money, and you find me starting my business, and I was able to be successful for 3 years without any training, nothing, it means I'm sustainable. I can sustain myself. Logical. That's my logic. For 3 years, I'm not under training, but I'm running my business.
and my business is sustaining me. While I'm running a shebeen, you know, I'm talking from the background of the shebeen. The shebeen, I could take my children to school, I could do anything. But my bank balance in the bank was not big. But in my house, I could pay rent, I could take children's school fees, extra lessons, whatever, I could do that. For me, that is sustainability. So what do they mean by that you must be financially sustainable? You know, that's practical things that I'm asking. To say, and then they say you will do monitoring because you conducted workshop and whatever. And we go to workshop, everything, and they will not, you know, really, really do what, bring what I want to bring on board. Hence, I'm questioning again now, Chair, in that thing to say, are we not doing duplication of what CIDA is doing? I'm just asking, how is it doing? What CIDA is doing? What NYT is doing? So, and the one of who benefits, who qualifies to be in the project, I'll take it later because I've really become, you know, I'm skeptical about government department becoming beneficiaries. Or, yeah. Let me flag it and then we'll deal with it. I'm just asking this one for the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just a follow-up. The earlier response was that with regard to the jobs and permanence thereof, there is no written guarantee. In other words, you don't have to hold anybody responsible for non-permanent job. Yeah. So applicant. Yeah. So it is correct to assume that therefore the number of jobs that are promised can be realized and also cannot be realized in COVID, given your answer to the question. So you perhaps will have to comment on that. The second one, which is associated to that in terms of the 20 million and the 4 million that I'm going back to this, I went to example, and I'm using that million as an example. What is the requirement for this applicant, this 20 million? What I'm just trying to find out the calculation of this 20 million. Is the 20 million acting as a guarantor for acquiring the 4 million by the applicant? For the applicant's calculation of the 4 million would include what to come to that? Or the applicant is required to produce the bank statement that say, I have a 4 million in the bank, or somebody has promised me that this 4 million rent would be paid into my account. I just want to have a bit of understanding of this 4 million, and I'm using the O2 as an example, the match funding issue. Because the 20 million, it is not necessarily in a bank, it's in a letter form. It says, we will give you the 20 million, but we will pay you in tranche. Now, I want to understand the method on the side of the applicant. What is the method that shows that the applicant's got a 4 million rent? Is that once, is it equal the same method is applicable to the funder of this project? So if we can explain that. Because if you're saying that you are building entrepreneurs and building the applicant that sometimes may not necessarily have the cash, but they may calculate the cash differently to come to the cash. I don't want to lead these questions myself, but I just want to understand the fact sheet in terms of that. I do have another one. This one is not related to this hold-up. I just wanted to find out, because I think the committee plays an important role, the adjudicating or the investment committee. Now, I just want to find out the method of the investment committee, because it's an independent body. It may sometimes use a number of people in a meeting to decide, or sometimes may be guided by weighting of numbers. The criteria that's got number weighted, which whether the number are even or uneven number of the committee is immaterial, because the weighting would then give you the results that you want in terms of the project. I want to understand that it's a kind of method of that investment committee. Now, and for now, I see they are nameless. It's just an institution that has got no one body. I would like to know more or less who are this investment the committee? Who are they? So that at least we know the body. Yeah,
let me post check. That's from my own understanding, and I guess for the team's understanding. Honorable Mr. Ghana, when you say who, the one that is Darren Arendt, or who means that it must be people who have a wealth of experience in this kind of a thing, I guess you is the latter that you're looking for. Right? Because I'm not sure about the names, it really helps us more than you want to know that what are the qualifications of these people who are there. I think that's what you're looking for. Because I would really like to avoid asking that is Mr. Ramasagana there or who, you know.
No, Chair.
Because I think some of the issues. Maybe we want to know the principles more than anything else, you know. That's my understanding.
You are mainly my question. And you don't have to ask my question. I have asked the question, and I said it's a comprehensive response I'm looking for it. It's no secret. The committee names are no secret, because there will be people who have been assessed that have been put there to carry on the responsibility. So I would like to know them, at least, because they have a very, very important job to do.
I want the questions were confined to the original question, not anymore. Because I think some of the 20 million, which is just an example, and the 4 million, I was more concerned about the 4 million. Because if we have a very, very beautiful business plan, which hasn't got that, I don't know the English word to use that, yeah, match funding, and it's very good, do you link those people, or do they just have to see where how they get? They make up that match funding. That's what I'd like to know. Do you say this is a very good business plan, and these poor people from that corner of Limpopo will never have this money, so we'll take them to a finance institution so that they get this money, or do we just say it's just the DT, you don't have the match funding, we can't help you? I think it will be covered in this. What Honorable Ramachakan asked, but mine was just missed on those very poor ones who have good business sense, and we'll never have that much funding, but you see that business sense is okay. And what I also like to do is this, what I say, my selection, the concept notes, and the fact that you said your focus will be on youth. A person might be a youth and unemployed and seeking some business until he outgrows that youth issue. And then at the age of 40, he still wishes to, he still has that ambition, but was never considered anywhere. He's graduated out of youth. How do you take that person? Do you say, yes, this is the second great application, we just concentrate on the youth, because we focus on youth, and thereafter we'll see those who
graduated from UC, or do we just put them in the same basket and say we see, and you know how maybe adjudication team works? I don't know, because there are some who really have been looking for businesses and can get through until they are older, and they are afraid to say, now I'm going to compete with them. I wonder if I'll be accepted. That's that clarity we also learn, because we have people who come there and say, I've been looking for business, and say, this person is still young, but really he's definitely been knocking at the doors of businesses but could not be recognized. That's the clarity I'll like that. And
are you done, comrade?
Jackson, only three short questions. The one is, how many outreach projects are in the rural areas of the 61? The second question is, the different departments, when they indicate that they create jobs, are they part of, did I ask the question, how many of the departments are involved in this, making use of this jobs? Because if we ask the department how many jobs they create, is there a duplex of information? Yes or no? And the third question is, what is their link with NYDN? Because I want to find it links with the question that was the whip asked earlier. Because if we say we create 100,000 jobs, is some of the 100,000 jobs of NYDA part of jobs that you created or not? Or did they get any financial assistance from you years from now? Thank you, Chair.
And the third one?
The third one is the marketing of this. Is it marketing?
It was marketing. I just want to find out, where is it marketing? Is it marketing mainly, again, in the cities or in the rural areas? I just want to find, is there a marketing program in the different provinces?
For the jobs fund.
For the jobs fund. Thank you, Chair. And is it the public participation in this? Is it going to you mentioned earlier that they work through the chambers and this thing. But if there comes an invitation from me in my PCO office, listen, we want you to have a marketing of the jobs fund in my specific constituency. After I invite them, or what is the process we have to follow? I would appreciate that, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Mfola.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to find out in terms of these jobs that are created to say they are saying they are sustainable. My question is to say, in terms of salary-wise, is it a living wage from this job? Or are we just saying jobs for the sake of saying jobs? Of creating jobs is one thing. The other thing it says, the other than talking about work seekers, placements, people where they are being placed by these, I don't know, companies, but what I want to understand, because they made even an example like call centers, where people will be placed at call centers, and all those things to say, you know, maybe they should have say in the report, I don't know, that we gave so many companies so much, so many jobs, so many people are employed, you know, so that we can have a clear who's who in the zoo. Like when we talk about 61 out of 66 projects that they contracted, who are they based on where? How much? Because it's still not yet clear to say who are those who benefited out of the 61, so that when we talk, we know that we are talking to, and they are talking that they sort of where they incubate SMMGs. Is that the only companies that incubate, for example, away too, or are there other companies that incubate? What I'm trying to say is to say, if the placement for jobs, I would have loved to see where they say, in terms of placement in jobs, these are the companies that we work with and gave money to. And then in terms of SMMEs, these are the companies that we work with, gave money to,
and this is what is happening, so that we can have in-depth knowledge. Kahneman is like a summary that now we have to dig out answers out of the summary that they gave to us. The second issue, I thought maybe I didn't read the English well. When the job fund was started, it was to say, is to assess in terms of job creation, whether it's an idea or it's an existing company, or what, or the company wants to expand, now because they got more funds, that's why they're looking for funds. I thought it's for that. But the explanation that I'm getting now here, it says it's fit for task. If I gave you 20,000, you must give me also 20,000. I must also pop out 20,000 as an SME. But as an SME, this is an idea that I
already two popped out for me, then they were given 20 million.
Yeah, you know, so I must be made. Now, in terms of the South African background, most of our people will never be able to do that. Now, my question is, are we on the right track in terms of job funds? Today we are going to develop people outside. If we come with this criteria that makes 90% of South Africans, they will never benefit. 10% will benefit. So what? Why? Why do we have this job fund? It is going to create, it is going to be an obstacle in front of us. Why do we put money into it? Because we thought that they will create an enabling environment. But they are not creating an enabling environment. The environment is still closing me outside as an ordinary South African because they got this criteria to cheat for tax. So, thank you.
Yeah. it's fine. I think that you have something. Something. Some rural areas.
No, no thanks, Chair. I think mine is just a small question. Hello, around the 92,000 plus minus 92,000 jobs that will be created out of the 61 projects, as it has been alluded to, I just want to check, maybe from the labor-related kind of an arrangement that. In terms of those jobs, I understand that you are also saying it will be the sustainable jobs going forward. But I want to check whether, how do we categorize them? We normally speak of decent jobs. So I just want to check whether we do have the decent jobs out of that 92,000, or we envisage to have. Just want to check that kind of arrangement. And also relate that to the kind of skills that might as well be also needed. Whether these projects are also attracting people who are highly skilled. If as well they attract people with highly skills, I want also to understand that are the projects able to attract the highly skilled people? And that we have those kind of skills, maybe ourselves in the country, because I also have an understanding that at some stage we do not have skills that respond to the needs that might be coming up. So I just want to check that thought when I've had that, of course, you have also touched on the issue of skills within on how people are being skilled there. But now I want to relate it with a decent job and maybe those highly skilled. Short skills that are not sufficient within the country. I think I just wanted to check the decent job and high skill things and the response.
I think your packet of questions is full now. Everybody including court, will have a question. Will have a question now to respond to. I think there are many questions. The last one. Okay.
Chair, the presentation suggests there's been a first round, the second, and the third. Now, I just want to understand the large spend, about 9 billion, right? You're saying 3 billion is committed. So instead of 6, or there around, or 5 something. Now, I'm sure this the balance sheet must be able to show a little bit more than that. If the fund has started 2011, surely should be growing with the money in the bank. it's no interest. No, I'll hear that. Let's deal with that. Now, I did want to ask the question, Chair, in terms of the must certainly be a plan. It's now 2011-13, and we're in the third round, you're going to get into the fourth round now, and so on. In terms of your really kind of rollout plan, in terms of the Big Bang kind of that you intended to have, what is that kind of plan that you say? Because we have been critical about job fund and job fund that has not been implemented, that has been slow in the implementation. And so I just want to get an indication from you in terms of that acceleration. And secondly, I just want to understand the collaboration model. What is your collaboration model with respect to the job creation in terms of the other institutions that also do the same, the kind of collaboration model that can weed out the kind of duplication that may happen in terms of the calculation. So there must somehow be a collaboration model that. What is that collaboration model that you have? And the collaboration and the feeding model. If you're talking about internship, and you're talking about a whole lot of training, there must be a feeding model in the process of that, and a collaboration in terms of the skills and branching off of those skills in terms of the existing work and existing undertakings that has been taken by other enterprise, public or private, in terms of the model. Thank you, Sir.
So the way in which we are going to respond is that Dumisa is going to take first bite at the chair, and he's going to cover the issues as he wants, and then on the financial issues, Lisa will provide in-depth explanation around the financial issues. Then there's a set of governance issues around the investment committee, our selection criteria, with this consistency in that, and Timothy will respond to that, and I'll pick up the rest of it. Thank you.
Chair. There was a question which was asked around the sustainability determination as to how do we determine whether the company is sustainable or not. And at the same time, there was also a question that was asked about the guarantee that's included that's supposed to be given by the applicant at the beginning, the requirement that is expected from the applicant. Let me just address the sustainability. What actually happens within the job fund? When applications come through, they get evaluated obviously at the beginning at concept stage, and then the second stage, there's business plans that come through. So those business plans, they actually get appraised by the project managers, portfolio officers, or investment officers, if one use that word for better term. And then we have a specialization or specialists that are actually looking at the appraisals, and they actually interrogate the financial model which has been presented on the project. And they also interrogate the capacity for the project to be implemented. You remember the team mentioned earlier that we actually disburse the money on a quarterly basis. Now, what actually drives us to get to that point is the fact that when we do appraisals at the beginning, we look at what we call the project implementation plan. Inside the plan, you say to us for the first year, in the first quarter, these are the activities that are going to do. And then these activities are going to cost X amount of money. And then when we appraise your project, look at your whole business plan, and look at your activity, look at your budget, we now know that in the first quarter, we need to budget for you to have X amount of money. In the second quarter, there are certain activities that you're going to be doing, and then we'll give you so much money for the second quarter, third quarter, and so on. The following year, you just group it, and then you tell us what is it you're going to do in the second year, what is it going to do in the second year. Now, when it comes to the sustainability, we determine the sustainability of your business upfront at the time when assessing your business plan. But every quarter, when we're supposed to give you money, we don't go and appraise your business again. But you give us a report to say, these activities that I said in the first quarter that I'll do, and you've given me money to do, I have done them. There were 11 of them, I've done 10. Number 11 I couldn't do because I'm going to do it in the second quarter, and then let me go through and see that. So that we reallocate and we look at the money and saying, okay, you've done everything that you needed to do, you've achieved the goals of what you needed to achieve, then we move forward from there. And then from that exercise that we do, it gives us a whole lot of answers. One of them is to just prove that is your business sustainable? Is it continuing? Is it going to continue further than where it is? And how far forward can we look in terms of your business? And then what is also very important is the question that Mr. Ramatrakan asked is that when you come in to the jobs fund, we give you, let's say in this case, we're talking about hours, we talk 20 million rand. Let's say we gave you 2 million rand in the first quarter. And then they have put in, let's say, 150,000 rand for their own money. The issue is, it's not that we're looking for guarantees. We don't want a guarantee. We actually expect that the applicants need to put their skin in the game. Because when you give free money to people generally, not generalization, but mostly, more so than not, people will just use the money, and then they'll come back and say, but I couldn't deliver what I needed to deliver. But if they have got something that they put into the game, their skin in the game, they will still have something to lose. Now, that is where the difference of this fund is from many other funds. So I hear the members are keep yes.
There are many questions. I don't want to disturb.
Okay.
But when you ask each question, there are implications for other questions. Yes. Honorable Mashiko says, the people from the township don't have money.
Yes.
You know that they are an enterprise. But this person has got an idea of why he comes to you with a business plan. So maybe your first question is, have you got money for this? Person doesn't have money. Okay, sorry, walk away. So what I'm trying to say is that when you respond, for example, please take that. No, nothing start from there. Mm-hmm. Take that into account. For instance, I think you have started because our understanding was that you give a person will receive a run for a run if the project is approved. But now we hear that in some cases, 20 million and 4 million. But just, we're not there. You know, we don't understand when the run for a run, when what you call it, when do we deviate from that? Okay.
All right, thanks, Ted. I think it's a very good point that you mentioned. It's very important. Like when we showed our we showed the 20 million and the 4 million, which is different to 1 rand, to for every 1 rand. What you're looking at in terms of the criteria is that if a private entity, a private company, comes and applies for funding, they say they want 10 million rand, and the project cost could be 20 million rand in total. So we say to them, for 20 million, in this project, we can only give you 10 million, you put 10 million. So it's 1 rand for every one, for every rand that you give, for every public entity, for every private entity. Any entity, that is a public entity, will give you 1 rand, you put 20 cents. Okay? So for every rand we give you, you put 20 cents. So it's, the project cost is 1 rand 20, right? So if it's a municipality, as an example, it's 1 rand for 20 cents. We give you 1 rand, you take 20 cents. And then if it's a department, it's the same thing. It's 1 rand for every 20 cents that you give. And yes, and any non-government organization is also a 1 rand for 20 cents that they actually put in. So that's where the difference.
Government department.
They also get, yes.
We'll come back to that one.
There's a double dipping issue that we need to deal with, but we actually check to make sure that
is something that should not necessarily happen.
So, Chair, in terms of the other issue of the fact that there's an organization that sits in the township that wants to put in, that's got an idea, that wants to make money, and then they come to the job fund and they get rejected. One of the criteria, because there are so many projects, there are so many programs that the government is distributing money. The job fund was established, as I mentioned earlier, that it should not displace those programs that sit there. Hence, the other bigger focus was to leverage funding, to get more money into the fiscal, to help in the creation of the jobs, not just the government alone putting money. The government must put some money, and then the other entities must also put their money. So from those entities, as they apply, they come to us and say they want to apply. One of the criteria that we have is a track record of 2 years. If a company comes today and they I've got this brilliant idea, I haven't had a business before, I'm going to try and run this business, I'm going to apply the job fund, that person will not qualify in the job fund, because the job fund doesn't fund those type of companies. They should go to the other companies like your NYTAs or your NES and so on that fund those type of entities. Hence, the displacement is important for us not to happen. So those ones will actually not be funded. And then at the same time, if an organization or an entity comes to us and say they are applying for this particular funding and they want to put this in a PTY limited, they must understand that they will put 1 rand for every 1 rand that we give them, right? So because it's a proprietary limited company, so that's the other important thing. So in terms of saying that the people that are in the townships are not benefiting from the fund, we do get that question quite a lot. But the important thing to note is that it's not only about the people in the townships to benefit by just having businesses. It's more the people that are in the townships that don't actually have the jobs, that actually now have jobs, the jobs that would not have been created in the first place, are brand new jobs, which are now sustainable jobs and a new permanent job. So they actually benefit quite a lot from that side. But there's quite a few other businesses that are coming through that have got a location within townships and rural areas, et cetera, that actually come and benefit from this. It benefits people within the area in which they stay. Now, if I may just come back and close up on that sustainability question. Every time we apply at the beginning, we check sustainability. Every quarter, before we pay your money, we check your sustainability, and we make sure that you are going to continue going forward. I don't know if I should hand over to somebody else to take another question, and then we'll deal with it that way.
So I thought I'd add a little bit on the issues around funding that some of the members have raised. Denise has touched on what do we look at when a applicant comes to the jobs fund and says, I want funding. And he's spoken about two key things, which I'm sure you would have distinguished in what he was saying. One, he was saying that we will check the applicant's sustainability, we will check whether the applicant is viable. But secondly, we also check whether the project, so the actual idea, the intervention, is feasible and will be able to continue even beyond the life of the grant. The honourable member was talking about the issue around matched funding and, you know, what does it mean, who does it push out. The thing that the Job Fund tries to do is crowd in investments, mainly from the private sector, sometimes even investments from government to do slightly different things than being currently, and push that type of investment into the areas that need it most. So why do we ask private companies for one-on-one? Because we want the most bang for buck. We want private companies to be able to invest in SMEs, invest in entrepreneurs, invest in rural areas, invest in young people that are coming out of schools or even coming out of schools with a matric, who need to find placement but who can't find that match in terms of the industry. So what we're saying to all applicants that are coming to the jobs fund, we want to see two things. Can you implement the idea that you have? And two, does this idea make sense? Does it make sense that you're going to go into these areas and pull grassroots entrepreneurs? Are you actually able to increase your turnover? Will you be able to create jobs? So it's two different things that we're checking. Is the idea feasible? Will it work? Will it be able to create jobs? Will money flow into the rural areas? Will beneficiaries take money into their pockets? Will decent jobs be created? And then as an applicant, whoever you are, whether you're a municipality that has an idea for your area, or whether you're a private company who wants to do something different, can you actually implement that idea? The match funding requirement has been something that's different to most other funds. And the real question wasn't that you want to penalize anybody, but where there are pockets of money that are not being used in a manner that stimulates and catalyzes the environment, we want to pull that money in. Denise mentioned the term that we call skin in the game. It means that we want to see that you also have an interest. As a private company, we're not just going to give you fake money. What we're wanting to see is you have an interest, you invested in the same outcome that we as governments are invested in. The requirement is much, much lower for non-profit organizations because we obviously recognize that we don't expect that those sorts of organizations would be able to put large amounts of money in. And the match funding that comes in mainly is contributions from other sources. So you'll find for NGOs, for example, what they actually bring to the table is not necessarily their own cash. It's money from international donors that have put money into the organization, which we're then able to use to catalyze a specific outcome. In the main, the private sector matched funding is own cash off of your balance sheet. But you'll find that for NPOs, etc., like your OSs, it's actually contributions from other sources, from social responsibility programs, from international donors. Some of it, in some cases, in the farming environment, in cooperative savings schemes and investments. But those very small contributions in comparison to what the jobs fund would capitalize. And then how does the project costing work? In essence, what happens is when they come with this idea, they check off in enormous amounts of detail what do they want to do from the first year all the way through to the end of the third year. What are the activities that they're going to do? And what the DVSA team is required to do is to look at exactly the sustainability. Does this model actually make sense? If they invest in counting skills, if they invest a little bit of loan financing, if they give them working capital, if they help them with their books, if they link them to Tick and Pay to sell their fruit, if they make those types of agreements, will they actually be able to grow this business? Will they actually be able to employ more people? Will it take them, you know, into the next phase of their lives? And that's the team that specifically they say they need to appraise those types of things. So that's how the activities are set up, what each of those activities will cost, and then of course what our investment as a jobs fund will catalyze, and what the other bits of contribution will then contribute to. Just the last piece of your question was around, okay, are we sitting with 3 billion?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. When you're answering there, I don't know if you've looked at it at all. I can't remember how many D's and how many E's there are in the new policy, but you're basically for your manufacturing components or your supply components to other companies, you're getting points for buying from smaller companies. Have you looked at trying to see how you could then fund those smaller companies, linking them to larger companies to be able to start manufacturing? Thanks.
This is on the two responses. I just want to to be clear in my mind. Help me to do reconstruction of what you just said. The name, the job fund. What you've explained is actually not a job fund, but a private sector support fund for them to create a job. That's what it is. Yeah, it's a pitch of this. It's at a level. Yeah, it's a pitch at a level. You're saying crowding in, you use the word crowding in resource. So the pitch of it is more or less the same thing that happened a few years ago when there was this issue of a big possible retrenchment and the program to support rather than retrenchment, retraining and the government putting some resource to it. So when I listen to you, so I say the question that we are asking, because of the pitch, you have said that I'm saying that, because of the pitch that you have pitched there at it, it is not necessarily at the level that you're asking the question. This is a private sector support program for them to create jobs. That is why we're talking rent to rent. Because if you look at Aweto, you ask who is Aweto, now you would say at the end of the day, it is not somebody creating a new company out of a township of Alex. Now, when the next slide says supporting 1,000, it's actually a Wetus program.
Yeah.
It's a Wetus program that they say this is what we're going to do, not necessarily the other way around.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing the deconstruction of what I'm listening to here is that this is not what I thought the job fund is going to be. Now this is the animal now that we have to understand it to be. In terms of creating jobs, when you build the private sector and help them to put rent on rent, it will go employ people in Alex. In that way they come on board as a laborers, and that will get some training later for them to skill and reskill and then develop somewhere later. This is what it is. So I'm just saying, Chair, that the whole list of questions I have, if we were to cut to chase, this is what it is. So it is not necessarily what we're hoping that it's going to be this massive job creation, because you say public works must do that. The others, NYDA must do that. Our market is different market. We teach this particular market. So, am I right? With this construction, because this is my...
Yes, sir. I think if I could just say that I'm very thankful to the member for raising this, because I think that it is confusion about what the job fund is, and that maybe people's expectations are this thing that's called the job fund, and everybody was looking for a job, and we had that in the first round. People are looking for jobs, they're coming to the fund thinking that they can get employment, and that is not what the fund is about. So if the member would just give me a job, I'm very grateful, because we would like to say and provide more detail about what the job fund actually is. And I apologize if what the members thought it was and what it actually is different. What I can only say is that in the inception of the fund to where we are now, all of these things have been in the public domain, and it clearly sets out what the fund is, what the fund doesn't do, what the fund does not want to displace. And I think sometimes people want to, because you want to suggest that we're going to be creating jobs, you don't want to be in a position where you go, oh no, but we're not just creating jobs, and we're not creating the jobs we see. The job fund is different. It is different in that it is not just working with the private sector. It is working with the public sector, and it's working with the non-profit sector. But how it is different is that you are looking for the commercial viability of an idea. Because if you grow a business, and if the business is sustainable, then you would be able to open up new markets, you would be able to create more jobs. So is looking at jobs from two perspectives, Jane. There is creating demand for jobs, which we don't have enough of in the way in which our economy is currently structured. And so we have the two funding windows in infrastructure and enterprise where you have been able to stimulate demand for jobs by stimulating those enterprises. But we also recognize in South Africa that we have an issue around the supply. We've got lots of workers in this country who are unemployed, but there is a mismatch between what their abilities are and the kind of jobs that are currently in existence. And so on that side, we're looking at the support for work seekers. And in a nutshell, what is the support for work seekers? It is really about saying that there are people who have certain skills, but not quite the skills that the labor market is asking for. So what can we do? What kind of interventions can we support that will assist these people to be better matched with what the labor market is asking for? But not just wishy-washy kind of, you know, how you will groom yourself when you're going into a job. It's about how do you present yourself in a job, how do you go through an interview process, but critically, what kind of technical knowledge is going to be required of you when you get into that job? And if you get into that job, who can offer you that job? So it's taking that person from getting them work ready, getting them a technical skill, and then over and above that, making sure that that enterprise that you are supporting, who's facilitating that process, actually has agreements in place with potential employers that these people know they can go from unemployment into a different job. So that's the thing. I'm very thankful that you've asked the question, because I do understand that that is where a lot of criticism comes and is directed at the fund, and people are expecting the fund to be one thing and the fund is something else. So apologies for that. But you wanted to
Yeah.
You talk too much English, maybe. I don't know it. What I'm trying to find out is, it says, it's not man. It says the program statement or whatever they call it on, I don't know which page it is, it's talking about ability to respond to structural unemployment hampered by structural distortion, inequality, fragmentation of South African economy. But when I'm listening to your explanation, it does not talk to that one. That's why I'm asking so many questions. No, I'm just raising the issue.
Yes.
That's why we are asking so many questions. Because what is written here, I don't know, is this a program logic? Something, the program logic. You know, and it's also taking the significant depth of potential for both enterprise and skills development. Yeah? But what you are saying now, to say you are dealing with two based on that, does not talk to that thing. Totally. Whether that's what I'm saying, maybe I don't understand the English. Because we are saying, Utandi has got a small business in the township. But this business of mine is aimed to create jobs. At the end of the day, I can't access job fund because job fund sets it for that. Where do I put in? And I also challenged you to say, who said if I'm running a shebeen, I'm not an experienced or I'm not, my business is not sustainable. What I'm trying to say to you is, an entrepreneur, whether you're going to school or you do not go to school, because going to school is to be able to read and write. If I'm an entrepreneur by nature, I'll make good out of my business. And that's what I'm saying, you're not capturing. Because if you're able in the job fund to capture an entrepreneur or a person who's sitting there in the township running a shebeen, you know in a shebeen how many employees you have a lot? Because there's one who picks up bottles, there's one who's a security, there's one who go and buy that beer. You know, there's a lot in a shebeen if you sit in a shebeen and sell. You know? Yeah, so I'm not saying, I'm saying in a shebeen, you can have 20 people that you employ. The other one comes and does my washing. The other one makes sure that my children go to school. And I'm paying on these people. And you still say to me, I'm not sustainable. You still say to me, I don't have skills. All I'm trying to say is, can we relook how do we look skills issues? That's what I'm talking about in the job. Because for me, it's like what Honorable Ramadaka is saying. You are pitching at private sectors, NGOs that can take their money. I belong also to an NGO that doesn't have money. So if we're going to apply from our NGO, we're not going to make it because our NGO doesn't have money. But it's running daily. You know? So all I'm trying to say is, the job fund, I don't know how did you look at it when it was formed by government, by this parliament. It was to make sure that we capture those small things because they kept on falling throughout the ranks. There is those private, there's social, whatever you call it, the EPWP and ever. You know, the other, there's ETI with the next, but there's still cracks for this small business. And where do they sit in? That's what we are talking about. And if you are saying, no, people want money for free. Even if I have money and I make tit for tat, I can still mess with the money. Although I've got tit for tat. So you can't say because I don't have money, I want more. So all I'm trying to say is, let's take people as individual or companies as individual. That doesn't mean if I've messed up, everybody's messing up. Because that is the answer that I'm getting from you to say, because people like freebies, now everybody wants freebies. No, not like that. All I'm trying to say is, can we relook? Because if that's what we are supporting as parliament, hey, then we're supporting the wrong thing. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Then we have to relook and take the money back and look for something else, give it another name. Because what we envisage is to make sure that these people that are falling through the cracks, there is that is created for. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe the collaborative issue model could have brought something into it. It's just that it's placed as if it's something far away from the existing institutions. Because if we look at it, you explain that you don't sponsor SLM issue, sponsor intermediaries. But the Mr. Honorable Ramatlakane ask about the collaborative model. Maybe if you had gone there, because we do understand your introduction said you don't focus on SLMEs and all the stuff. It was just acceptable somehow. But if maybe you could just show the collaborative part of it, because when you mentioned we saw CIFA and what, but we thought they are here. Here they are coming together, issues are coming together. But when we explain it went apart again, the CIFA issue couldn't be brought nearer to what you are saying. You were a real business model that concentrated on those big issues that now is getting away from, we know the structural issues have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. But how do you address it so that you are all satisfied that they are? If we have structural distortions, they'll always be there. But Honorable Kulis referred to skilled and unskilled and that type of jobs that which we thought we could bring together. That we always when we talk about EPWP, we talk that different jobs and all. But It could come out even when you responded. If you could have said, yes, you are aware of the fact that they say the EPWP produces decent jobs, but will collaborate with other structures, the sectors and whatnot, and make sure that permanent jobs can come out because we'll be able to monitor and evaluate the such institutions to take them from that sort of places, bricks in the street for 6 months to contractors and things like that. But your explanation was actually getting away from the collaborative model and it left us saying really it doesn't address what it was
you are going to address.
No, I definitely can't do that. All I can do at best is to contribute to an understanding of what it is that the Jobs Fund is and what it is not. I think that's still to a large extent been established, but I thought I want to underscore just one point. Okay, no, that's fine. Because I wanted to make a political statement.
Work readiness,
The partnerships are with your thesis. The partnerships are with your big industrial companies that take them through technical programs. The partnerships are with artisan programs or with MEPs. So those types of feeders in and how we pull people from where they are into giving them the types of skills to get them work is extremely important. And that's what we need to better articulate in our websites, in our communication, how we actually move people through and how we collaborate with you.
Yeah.
You want to
ask? The other thing that's important is the fact that when you say we're pitched at a point, it's exactly true. Because one of the things that is actually within our requirements, we say we do not fund projects that are below acceptance base. So the small thing that is there would not necessarily come to us and say, I want 12 to put a 12 million project. Right? But the Shabin will want to put in, let's say, 800,000 or 400,000, whatever that is, and then they will come to Awit, as an example. Or they will come to another entity that will be funding a certain project that is going to give money as well. Right? So we connect, they will go into the entity, that's where the cooperation, the feeder that comes through this.
It's quite evident in our farmers projects, our smallholder farming projects. You would find that an NGO who helps develop a specific product to help develop farmers to maximize or optimize the value of your land. It's difficult for the small farmers to be able to come to the job fund and say, I want 12 double rand a month. But for those who are helping those farmers and bringing them in and connecting them with where they can sell their produce, etc., they can come and say, I want 12 million to service 40 farmers. And to be able to link them with the Pick and Pay, to be able to link them with the Woolworths, and be able to produce and take their product to market. And that's sort of the linkage that's been missing for the job
site. I think those projects that we support, there's those kind of partnerships that come as a single application. So you would say, I don't know how to do the training, but that teacher knows how to do the training.
Yeah.
So I'm partnering with that teacher, and I'm partnering with that company who's going to absorb the people once they're finished. So that's, we have an extended lesson, how those things come together.
To make
sure that people don't double that, so they get some money here and some money there. We, in our criteria, now people don't always disclose, but we do ask in front to tell us what are your other sources of funding. And then when we do our due diligence, we do our due diligence on your actual business. So when you look at the income statement, you must be aware of the source of funding, so that is a place where we pick up that information so that people don't double them. Where, for example, a government department comes and says, oh, they're looking for money for some kind of special project. We would go to our budget office and public finance office at Treasury to say, but wasn't this the budget for on the department budget, so you should be asking us for that kind of money. So that is all kind of things that we do in the background. And then also to respond to that Shabin's owner, I don't think that we are in the disagreement. Of course they know how to run a business, of course they don't need to have any training, but what they get is that they might be additional funding to expand their business. So what have we done in instances like that? We collaborate or we supported an organization like Business Partners who makes funding available to smaller operators. And we then, because of the job and money injected into Business Partners, they can then make loans available at a better rate to that smaller business than what they would have without the job fund money. So we recognize our shortcomings. We can't reach right there when it is needed. And our methodology is to partner with intermediaries who will help us get to the level that we need to get.
Even where the small business are unable to access finance from your bank, all of the other types of funding institutions, we need to be able to fill that gap so that they're able to access finance in a structured way.
I think just one other thing in terms of the supporting of the smaller companies for so that the triple B can be increased and enhanced and so on.
this is where then the people can come and get supported, because they'll have to go through the intermediaries, because the smaller companies would not ordinarily have qualified to come in and actually grow their business. They would go through the intermediaries, and then the triple G improvement would come from that side. The investment committee.
Yes. I'm sorry, I understand what you're saying there, but you can make micro-manufacturing. Let's just say, for example, the procurement of pens for the state. Just why don't you manufacture the tip of the pen and supply that to big... You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the whole interest is, how can you market to those kind of companies to be able to say, if there's money available here, if you want to set up a small manufacturing company so you can get points to supply the government. So you kind of then adding people into the whole manufacturing sector where people don't want to go now because they don't want to risk capital that they don't need to risk if they get entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And also you're creating competitiveness in the market. So, and utilizing the cash flow that's there from government to sustain those businesses in the establishment. You don't have to answer, but it's just something that I would like you to think of.
So as winding up now, I think we have heard what you're saying.
Perhaps we can just talk about the social engagement committee and how...
Investment committee.
The investment committee. And then by way of a quick example, you were asking about first project support that is in our project pipeline. We've seen an example. This is the kind of thing that we want to support. It's called Ama Blomlo. It's out in Sri Lanka.
Blomlo.
Yes, flowers. And what they do is the local community, lots of unemployed women in this community, but they don't have access to land necessarily. So the applicant is leasing land from the municipality and is making this land available to these individual women in the community. They all get a little plot of land and they plant the flowers, the daisy, they farm this on this little piece of land that they get access to. This intermediary has connected them now to the international flower market. So there's a whole host of women working this plot of land. The intermediary access to market, providing that opportunity. In addition to that, they're expanding the kind of work that they are doing. They're also growing herbs. And what this intermediary has done is to leave them with Woolworths. So they produce the herbs, they must get to Woolworths. Woolworths, though, has a particular standard. We all know Woolworths is very fussy about what they have. And so what this intermediary does is to help these women standardize, raise their quality. They also then provide a cold storage facility and then also provide the linkage with the transportation, because that's obviously a huge gap in the supply chain to get it to Woolworths. So that is an example of some of the kind of project that we would support and the collaboration that exists across an entire agricultural
yeah.
On the investment committee.
So the member asked for the comprehensive answer. Given time constraints, I can give you a short answer, and then if it's a specific question, I can elaborate a little bit. So the investment committee is in. It'll be succinct. The investment committee of the Job Fund is independent, and that is independent of DBSA and of the National Treasury. So it's made up of a number of different constituents. So there are members from the National Treasury, four members from the DBSA, and those are independent board members from the DBSA. So of the DBSA board, of the independent members, they nominate four. There is a DBSA representative from the executive, and two independent members with specific expertise. So that is how the board is structured. No, they're not full-time. They just simply come for the investment committee meetings. It's chaired by Frank Pellini, and the deputy chair is Brian Whittaker, who is an independent member. So those are, and I don't have the specific names of everybody in front of me. We can definitely circulate if need be. I think the point to make about the investment committee is that they're independent from the job fund in that they sit and the job fund PMU appraise the projects, interact with applicants and all of these types of things, come and present to the investment committee and essentially try to dissuade the investment committee to support their projects. And this is a very important break in the chain of accountability, because what you don't want necessarily is people who are engaging with projects to package an application and appraise it, making the final decision. So the DBSA, in a sense, is incentivized to work with potential applicants to package the very best project that they possibly can. And they're completely empowered to do that, to work with them, to help them amend their applications in the shortlisting stage, all of this type of thing. Because at the end of the day, the investment committee will then look at it and make the final decision. So how does the investment committee make their decision? There are essentially three things which they weigh up in making a funding decision. The first is the investment strategy of the jobs fund. So there's an approved investment strategy which talks about the kinds of projects which the jobs fund would like to support and the sectors in which it would like to support them. And this obviously draws on the National Development Plan, the New Growth Path, all of the kind of government policy documents to identify high potential sectors in the economy where this kind of catalytic funding could unlock things in exactly the four windows which should be up there. So that's the first thing, investment strategy. The second is the criteria. So you all have in the packs the copy of the criteria, and as you pointed out, they are weighted. And so each of the applications is assessed in terms of those criteria. There's scoring rubrics, there's ways in which we identify them, there's a whole lot of detail that goes into that. And the final thing is the existing portfolio. So the Jobs Fund does take a portfolio approach to its investments. An example of that would be in the Support for Work Seekers program. In the first two funding rounds, what we found is that there was very much an oversubscription of applications to this. That, you know, it was really interesting that the private sector in particular was saying, we have jobs that need to be filled, but we have people who don't quite meet that match. And they were really willing to put together big applications to train people and place them. So that window was oversubscribed. In the subsequent round, we did not open the window to support for work seekers applications because we were trying to manage the portfolio. So we managed it on those types of things between the windows and also partly based on risk, so it's a portfolio approach. So those are really the three things that the investment committee takes into account when making funding decisions. And of course, the very last thing is the amount of money available. If we add up, I don't have a number directly in front of me, but I think for the 56 shortlisted applications in the third round, you know, it's in maybe 10 or 20 billion rand worth of funding requests come to the investment committee. Obviously, we don't have that much available. So when we talk about the competitive process, the investment committee has to make some hard decisions about what to fund and what not to fund, because there's only a limited pot of money available.
Okay, just the last thing that is actually in the, it's a marketing. One question that was asked about marketing. We go out and help applicants in originating projects. That's one thing. The second part is we go out to radio stations, to Radio San Antonio Fente, we go to Ukwezi, Ukozi, all kinds of SAFM, and so on. All the radio stations. Right? As much as we can cover to actually go and say, this is what the job fund is, we are going to be opening a new window, this is going to be the time we're going to be opening it, this is the period we're going to be sitting open. And then from time to time, we then get invited by your morning live and your ETVs in the morning and so on. So we go in and say those particular things. But obviously, as a jobs fund, we don't want to pay for those marketing initiatives. So when they invite us, we just go in and we do our marketing and then we move on. And then they then have time, particularly on the radio, they repeat them at specific slots when they have to talk to people. So marketing is all over the country, we get it done. The other day we went to Umzimkhulu as an example. And we did some stunts there. It's like out there in the area, in the rural area. So we do quite a lot of this. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I don't know if I were to throw a question to the members, have you achieved what you wanted to the response? You know, but I think that we have, because we have learned a lot.
the lot that we have learned from our side, from our members, I think that the job fund is not something that we should really keep too far from us, so that I think there's room for improvement.
I think there is. In fact, I don't know how these reports go about. The estimates of national expenditure of 2013, they report that there were 65 projects. In other words, it could have been by design. Maybe there were issues of actuaries. Now here is 61 actuaries. Five not to make a decision, not completed. If that is correct, it shows, it raises the pace at, by which you take to approve. If as at December last year, you were at 65, because this is what is on page 194 of the AME, and today you're still reporting the same thing. So I see that as a challenge somewhere in terms of the pay. That is one. But I think the other issue perhaps that we need to you need to look at is the Ms. Exton or Naja at the beginning, you indicated that look, there's a whole what you call a number of other funders out there. But you know, if I go to DPSA and you look at my proposal, you say, well, we can't help you. Go and look for an intermediate to do this. Then I walk out disappointed. I think one other thing that you need, I think that maybe you should have discovered by now, and I think that we as members, listening to you today, we're picking up that from 2011 up to date, the DPSA out there in the on the freeway there. Now you say no, you don't qualify for this. Go to other people who can help you with what you're doing. I think that what we should look at is finding a one-stop shop somewhere. So that if from this door there's no help, and because the people out there, I mean, if the perception at this level of the members of parliament is that anybody can come to you and apply, and you say, no, it doesn't work like that, I think that you should be able to provide somewhere a space where people can move from this door to next door. That's okay, but we can't help you here. Maybe you go next door, we know those are the people who handle this kind of thing. So, but I think that we should start looking at those kind of things. For instance, honorable members, I think that something that we need to look at, just given to the committee section, Honorable Mashiro, is from what they are saying related to that. If you say to people, go to NEF, NEF says, we've run out of funds. How do we help you? Now, what does that person do? Because of those kind of things. I think that somehow this committee is also a portfolio committee for performance monitoring and evaluation. I think it's important for us to say, to look at the performance of this jobs fund itself. So, really, for me, I don't know, if we could just, you see, for me, I think that the more we asking questions, the more I got lost, you know. I didn't get towards a clear understanding. Mm-hmm. Where I thought that you say, Honorable Matagana, the level at which job fund is put is pitched at a very high level for ordinary persons.
Senator Snell says, what about a person who wants to manufacture something in terms of the new growth path, which is also focusing on the manufacturing? Will that a person be able to, small person, be able to enter? No, a person who is told, no, you go to the intermediate to do that. We can't speak to you. I don't know that what what you say. That's why I'm saying, really, in terms of now putting other heads of performance monitoring and evaluation, we really need to look at it. And one thing that really worries me, honorable members, is to say government departments have also accessed this fund like everyone else. And if you ask this committee, or national salary from the report that you get from national salary in terms of performance of those government departments with respect to their own budgets, they're not performing. They are not performing, you know. Now, but they have access to this, and part of our understanding is that as a committee, is that part of their, within their budget, they must work out this element of job creation from their own budget. How are they going to create jobs? What is it? What contribution are they going to do? Without what is called a jobs fund, you correctly said that in the conception of the jobs fund was not something that was going to be there permanently. It was meant to be there for a specific period. So now, if now the people are not going to create jobs because they are waiting for the job fund. I'm talking now the government department. I think there's a problem with that kind of thing. Municipalities, they don't spend. They are rollovers. Because it's infrastructure, you look at what you call it, the reports around the infrastructure of municipalities, of provincial departments, those departments in the provinces that are responsible for infrastructure like education, hospitals, and whatnot. You ask any member here, you ask for the report of those things. They do not spend. But how can they be made to have access to the job fund when they don't spend on their own, what you call a budget that they are supposed to be spending on? I think that we need to, what you call as we roll out this program, but continue to say who can, what you call it, be, who should access it or not access it. What are those conditions of accessing it? I think for us it is a bit of a challenge, you know. But also, having said that, I think that what we require from you, is Ali Eldred, is the list of those departments that have already benefited from the, what you call it, the job fund. In fact, whole list of other people as well. Sorry? Yeah. If you have it now, it is great, because we want to know who and how these people assess this. When they are, you know, it's like a baby, you know. You give this one a stock sweet and another one the same stock sweet, but this one throws away because she wants that other stock sweet, you know. Not the one that you think that, no, that one is better than this one. That's why we need to have that list and be clear who are these people, how have they used this the creation or the crime. You see, the other thing is, how does one qualify to be an intermediary? You got a list of these intermediaries? Because, you know, the issue of the intermediaries, I'm just looking at a way to, and the, okay. Now, I mean, the list of the intermediaries, and I mean, if I were to tell them, I'm not sure
going back to the question that Honorable Ramachan, asked about the individual. If the individual can do this, and remember, I think that throughout it has been saying, individuals can do this, but they might not be having the funds to start up this, but they are doing it. We spoke to Mr. Sajayo about other people who can do this, but who do not have the funds. They are placing the people as hotels and everything, but they don't have the funds of their own, and therefore can't qualify because of that. So, but others, they piggy-piggy on others and then have access to the funds. So. But I think that history tells us that around the world, many jobs are not created by your small, what you call it, businesses. Yes. But we are saying, so in South Africa, we say, no, it is not the case. We're looking for the big guys to do it, ignoring what they call it, the small ones. So, do you have a better experience than us? But when we do our own evaluation, we're looking at this thing, I think that those are some of the things that we can look at. Is that don't we look need to review the process? That is the job of evaluation. You can have this conception at the beginning, but as the process, as the program is being rolled out, you continue evaluating, you continue trying to improve so that it can achieve the... I think that the other thing maybe that would be important to have, you know, there's a lot of money there. In this 40 billion that you spoke about at the beginning, some of it is on this department. That's now, you're talking about WGP? Yeah, WGP now. That's for their own money, for their resources. But they have these four babies that they're talking about. They don't have one that they have. They want this other one. So, well, I think that those are a few maybe issues that from the discussion I picked up. Yeah, but I think also just the last one, the issue that Honorable Salafram raises about marketing, I think is important to do it. We're glad that you are doing it already. But Honorable Salafram says, can we invite you to come to our areas and talk about this? Yeah, so... I'm sure the honorable members will do that. Well, on that note, I would like to thank you very much. I think that this was a good presentation. We will dedicate some of the members to the investment committee. Thank you very much. We, I think, as Parliament, you know, we would like the Dodge Fund to succeed, but we would also like to find ways of ensuring that it can. I think that we're doing a good job, but I think there's room for making work more efficiently, you know, but also to be able to ensure that it reaches out. It's true that this government, has a lot of money out there to ensure that the jobs can be created. But I think whether the challenge could be with marketing or what, I think there might still be gaps, you know, in between that. What does IDC do? How is IDC the
this billion rand that ITC is giving to the youth and the women, how does it differ from what you are doing? So that's why you think maybe we need to find just some one shop, what is it called? One stop shop. You know, so that people don't have to run around the whole, what you call the Republic of South Africa looking for another one. But thank you very much. Board of members, from our side, we have a meeting this afternoon. But I want you to assist me. This afternoon's meeting is supposed to deal with the report. Which one? Which report? It's supposed to deal with two reports. No? One study tour to America and oversight to Haiti. These reports have been outstanding for too long. But I don't know if this afternoon we can say we can deal with them. I just need your guidance. The challenge with that is that in this term, there's going to be few sittings. There's going to be a lot of oversight. But we will not be allowed to undertake any oversight if there are reports that are outstanding. We need to approve these reports. The U.S. one is almost a year old now. The housing one, we're lucky to get to be allowed to go to Limpopo and Mpumalanga because we gave the promise that we would approve this report. But even if we don't do it today, we must approve it this week. Maybe what we could do today is say, let's go up and read this report. And tomorrow, what are you doing tomorrow afternoon? Sorry? Well, I understand that we don't have a quorum. Okay, we're supposed to do it tomorrow, to adopt it tomorrow. What time? Tomorrow morning? Okay, tomorrow morning is FSC, and then in the afternoon, then, these reports are long absent. We can do them tomorrow morning. And I just want to give us the opportunity to go and read them, make corrections, whatever contributions we want to make. And then when you come to the meeting tomorrow, let's just try to adjust them.
Can we ask Michelle if we have a problem tomorrow? Otherwise, we are.
Yeah.
You see, the point is, there are some of the duties of the future to buy this week, so we have to leave tomorrow afternoon, by 6.
Now, that's why everybody, tomorrow at 2, let's try to get that. But what I would like us to do, honored members, is to look at those reports, especially the one for the NYCA, and make recommendation that we would want to make. This afternoon. Oh, okay. So are we agreeing that then we're doing this report tomorrow morning, or we can come back to this afternoon and go through them tomorrow? We adopt them. Okay. All right, Majiro.
I don't know. We listen to you now. We can listen to us now.
I'm joking. Now there's going to be a little bit of disruption. We're just finishing now. I think that's what the other colleagues are saying. But let's come back this afternoon, go through this report, and then tomorrow we can adjust. Yeah, sure. Okay. So the meeting, now the meeting that is adjourned until 2 o'clock.